Welcome back to the First Burner Podcast. On today's episode, Laura Hannan rejoins us to discuss the off-season stories developing in Formula One. We reflect on some of the 21 drivers, along with a look ahead to 2022, and speculate who might be at an advantage. Join us for the next 20 minutes. You've enjoyed the anarchy end to last season?
Sure, didn't we all? I think I better keep my opinions to myself. Yeah, that was it was one of those ones. I don't think I've screamed at the telly with a long time, actually. I screamed at the telly. I think it's one of those ones where it's actually gone down in history as being like one of the weirdest ends to a championship ever. And I don't say that lightly. Like, it really was.
Yeah, it was mad. It was crazy, wasn't it?
I think it's weird to have it come down to just random decisions, like decisions for the last minute and the last lap. It's kind of just, it's a hard one to take, I would say, if you were on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, I've talked to a few different people about it and talked to Morris about it, and he's very passionate about it and says that it was all done for Netflix and stuff. And okay, you could be cynical and say that too, but yeah, like in the moment watching it, I was in disbelief. You know, I was just couldn't believe what I was seeing. But like, I don't think anyone could have preempted. But we won't dive too much into it because I'm sure there's enough to say and talked about it. But
I think everyone's talking about it at this point.
Everyone's all about it. Yeah. I don't know. I think in that moment it was people were said oh, he should have called a red flag, and yeah, not necessarily. Like, a red flag is a safety thing, not a sporting thing. So, you know, if there was a genuine reason for a red flag, there would have been one. But look, your man was obviously keen to get the racing going, and you know, people have said that, oh well, the race director has them discretionary powers. But it's like, well, okay, well, if he's got those discretionary powers that we were all supposedly aware of before the race, why didn't he do it at other tracks like Eiffel Grand Prix 2020 when he kept the safety car out for something like 6 laps, waiting for the lap traffic to catch up? So, you know,
The consistency in the decisions, for sure. Yeah, I think
throughout the year, I think everyone can agree on that this year. Like the way the decisions have been kind of rushed out between race to race and different interpretations. I think everyone can agree on that's not been consistent throughout the year.
Yeah, I think that was the theme of the year. I think is just inconsistency in decisions, but like you said, that comes down to interpretation. So it's a hard one to pin down.
What would you call it? A can of worms, I suppose, to get talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, for myself, whichever one of them won it, you know, it wouldn't have mattered. Either one of them would have deserved it. And, you know, it was still great to see Max, you know, been world champion and everything. And, you know, like, and whether you were on that side of it or not, I'm sure that we were talking last time a bit about Felipe Massa, and you almost maybe a little part of me was like, oh yeah, Jesus, that reminded me of the Felipe Massa moment. And then I immediately thought of you from the last time we were talking. I was like, oh right, yeah, Massa lost that championship in the last lap.
I think it was afterwards. Lee McKenzie put up something about, was that Timo Glock or something, when there was a crash in the back with Mick Schumacher. I think people did start thinking back on, geez, it was really close, and the last time it was that close was in 2008. It was class. I think it's like for me anyway, it was, watching it was exciting, but I don't think it would have ever mattered which one, because they both deserved it. And so I think either way it would have been an equal amount of I suppose talk about it, if that makes sense.
No, 100%. Well, there, if you flip the roles, you know, people, we'd still be saying the same things, you know. So it's neither one or the other. But next year is a pretty exciting year with these 22 regulations. I'm hoping to try and get over to the testing at the end of February if they'll allow people in. But it sounds like with the world kind of starting to move on, maybe they will allow people into it. So
that'd be cool.
Next year's car is something I'm very intrigued by. I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out. It's a pretty sight, you know, they're always changing stuff in F1 and making things up and making the teams work for it. But As changes go, it's pretty seismic, so I'm looking forward to see how everyone gets on. Any particular person, your any predictions you'd like to early predictions you'd like to make, or any
nobody can predict the next year. Absolutely nobody. Yeah. I wouldn't even hang myself with that one. I think like I hope that I hope it levels the playing field a bit. Like I do, I would like to see McLaren move up a little bit more because they deserve a bit more. I think they've really been, over the last number of years, they've made leaps and bounds in the right direction, and I think they're at the stage now where they could be fighting for championships, and I hope that does kind of level it. But that's would be my only thing that I hope happens.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like I think everyone can speak to that. If we could get a closer field next year and have a wider range of championship protagonists, then you know we're in for a fantastic season if that's the case. And it does seem like the template for designing a Grand Prix car, they've made that even tighter than it's ever been before. And with this new cost cap regulation coming in, I don't know, if it was me, I'll hang my hat in it and I'll say, well, the big manufacturer teams who had spent research and development in these rules may have a head start, but over the years, as the budget cap gets tighter and tighter, that you will see diminishing returns. Yeah. And probably 23, 24, 25, you might see a real leveler within three or four cars, and it will be the driver that'll be the determining factor. And it'll be more for us to be fussing over. So the racing itself, it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because this new car is all designed around racing. Like it's all been designed so the cars can follow each other and not overheat their tires and not endure the dirty air problem that they have. But it's weird. They're also making the tires much more durable. And I get this feeling some people are expecting like crazy races next year. But I have the feeling the races will be more neutered and a bit like the way they were back in the refueling era, even the way it was in 2004, 2005, etc. You know,
yeah.
I'm not saying we're going to have complete processions, but I get that sense that there will probably be less pit stops involved. But if that means that there's more actual on-track racing, you know, you don't have to have like three or four or five pit stops in a race. I think, you know, if you have, you can still, some of the best races last year were one stop, you know, so.
Yeah, it all depends on how close the field is on the track.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's where it'll come down to. So, that's all exciting. And how George Russell will get on, will Lewis Hamilton return, all this kind of speculation.
The promo for Formula One this year is very good, isn't it? It's like, will Hamilton return?
Yeah, exactly.
I think he will, but
yeah, I'd say so too. I'd be surprised to see him walk away. Yeah. That's what I would say. I would be very surprised to see him walk away. But I'm sure he's feeling massively conflicted as a man who's invested his life in it. And it's been a long time since he's properly lost a world championship, you know, and he lost it in the way he did lose it. So, I think the fact that he went to the post-season group gathering at Brackley, where they were, you know, congratulating the team on the Constructors' Championship, the fact that he was there and was willing to support the team, it sounds like that. And you know, it's his first big defeat in ages. You know, people are going mad because, oh, he's not on social media and not posting, so this must mean X. You know, it's like, well, you know yourself,
what
with social media,
he's taking a risk. Yeah. Taking a rest. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. After one of the hardest seasons he's probably ever done in his life. And, you know, if anyone takes time off and doesn't want to be posting every 2 minutes on social media, then fair enough. You know, I wouldn't begrudge anyone that. So, but look, yeah, I'd be surprised to see him not return, I'll put it that way. I think the media are making a bit of a meal of it, because there's not much else to talk about in the off season until probably February. So I think he'll return. I don't see any issue to that. How did you, like, if you want to see one driver do well next year, Ricciardo might be a good chance. And I think there were some signs there towards the end of the year he might get a bit better next year.
I'm actually wearing a Ricciardo hoodie right now.
Ah, fair play.
with any luck, I guess. Yeah, definitely. I've supported him for a good while now. I kind of hide it because people always say, oh, you're a Daniel Ricciardo fan. Like it's something you kind of hide, because you don't want too many people thinking that. There's often stuff, especially with female fans, like, oh, you only like him because oh, you only like him because you like him. Like, and,
yeah, I see what you're saying.
I think that works for me. And like, because I'm an old school fan, I can be like, well, stop it. I love Felipe Massa when I was 15. So leave me alone.
Yeah. No, you've got it right there. And look, the truth is, Ricardo, he's still a great racer. Like, there's no... Since the last time we were talking, you know, he was having a bit of a downturn, and then he won that race at Monza so emphatically, and the way he won it, it was like Daniel knows he's in front, he knows what he's got to do, you know, he had Max under control completely, in that race. He had Max continued, had Red Bull not fluffed the stop. It looked like Ricardo was still going to win it regardless, you know, and it was a huge turnaround, and yeah, like it just shows when I think with Daniel. If you give him the car that's competitive enough to there, he'll be there. That's my real belief. Like, if he's fighting for a win, I just think innately that comes out in him. I think if he's fighting for 10th or 11th, that maybe there's just something in there subconsciously that you just don't kind of click in as much. But he's a competitive animal, and you only have to see him when he was up against Max. Like, he was the closest driver there ever was to Max in terms of raw pace. And even then, you could speculate that Red Bull were slightly favouring Max as well. So he was, what, I think something like a tenth of a second off Max Verstappen. And yeah, fair enough. Lando fairly gave him a bit of a pasting this year. But again, new team, new car. Carlos Sainz even went on record to say, oh yeah, that car is a bit weird to drive, you know. So yeah, look, next year is a great chance for him to redeem all that. And McLaren and Ferrari are probably the two teams most likely to benefit from Mercedes and Red Bull fighting each other last year and maybe make a head start on their development ahead of all of them. So
yeah, it would be a good year actually to see. I want to see definitely what Carlos Sainz can do. I think he's probably the most underrated driver on the track.
And to agree, yeah, I'd agree with you there. Yeah, Carlos Sainz is... It's amazing how Carlos came into Ferrari and just, you know, like he did for everything, he adapted. He found a rhythm and a feel for that car. And whilst Charles was, you know, generally the faster driver, but it's Charles's team. And the fact that he could get very close and inched closer and closer and closer in qualifying throughout the year. And, you know, if Leclerc makes mistakes, Carlos Sainz needs to be away. Or if Leclerc makes mistakes, Carlos Sainz will always be there to pick up the pieces. And I definitely could see Carlos as a guy who would mount a serious world championship campaign simply from his ability to kind of adapt to any given situation, whether it's driving in the wet, driving in a McLaren, driving in a Ferrari. The fact that he can get to so close to Leclerc on raw pace, it just shows what a depth there is to Carlos Sainz. And he's a similar performance gap to Lando. And Lando is regarded as extremely fast. So
yeah, I think as well, you absolutely. See him in the way he treats the team and the way he works with the team. He's a leader. It's something you don't see very often. Is someone he does make decisions for himself. He calls out things. He's very good at explaining how the car is feeling to the engineers. Like, he has that leadership quality. And if he got the right car behind him, I think he could definitely blast a championship for sure. It's just a case of, does he get the car and is it the right year? And that's the I suppose the same with Lando as well. Does he get the car and does he get the right year? They all have the potential to become championship rivals, you know what I mean? It's just...
Absolutely.
It's all, some parts of it is just a little bit of luck and being in the right car at the right time, right year.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, look, it's the case with Lewis and Max and how they... That's why they were such big championship rivals, simply for both in the right place at the right time. And I do get that feeling that window will narrow now with this cost cap and the new rules.
Hopefully,
yeah. And I think Ferrari have, you know, Ferrari are a similar sized team to, say, Red Bull and Mercedes. Like, that they're very similarly sized. They've got similar sized resources. They have been in the doldrums for a while, but there's a few various circumstances as to why that happened. But they've showed some encouraging signs. In the last year, in the way they've developed their own car and they've made it better, like they've basically made almost a silk purse out of a sow's ear in the way, like, and they can still come up with really clever ways with the way they develop their gearbox and that kind of stuff. And they've got some great engineers there who, you know, they didn't have the pressure of fighting for a championship last year, and same with McLaren, they didn't have that pressure, and they would likely have more time to fuss over this incoming car than Red Bull and Mercedes. And Red Bull were, I know they switched off their development as well at some point, but you know, it's inevitable. If you see one guy getting ahead, you might say, right, take this car out of the wind tunnel for a week, let's put the other car in, and all of a sudden you might have lost a week or two's development. So it can happen, you know, it's part of the game. Though I'm really hopeful that you'll see the likes of Sainz and Lando and Ricciardo all fighting it out with the top teams next year. So let's see what happens in testing, I suppose.
Exactly. And then leave it all change again by the time they start racing.
Probably, yeah. They'll probably change the rules or something again. But back at square one. Laura, it's been great chatting to you. Is there anything else we'd like to talk about?
I don't think so. Like, yeah, I suppose the only thing is that final of Formula Woman isn't the 2nd or 3rd of March. And
2nd or 3rd of March.
If I get through those 2 days, I will go into a shootout of the top 15. And then after that, the top 15 go to a final 10. And out of the final 10, you get 4 drivers that are the winners. 2 drivers in the British GT Cup in the Formula Woman branded car. And 2 reserve drivers for the 2022 season. So all to play for.
That'd be someone. All to play for, Lars. So have you got like an itinerary of what's coming up in terms of racing and activities yet? Or is it kind of, they won't tell you what's happening until you get there on the 2nd, 3rd of March?
See, because it's televised as well, it's and it's a reality TV show. I say that very loosely. I don't think it's not exactly Love Island, but you know what I mean? It's very much hush hush in what we're doing because they need to keep it quiet for that. But what we do know is that we know the dates and we know that the final of the competition will be in Europe, somewhere in Europe. So that will be exciting. It'll be a brand new track somewhere in... I'm getting excited now, like as if I'm going to get there. It's going to be awesome. Like, my training for it is like a lot of gym training, sim training, and that rhymed. Get out on the track a few times beforehand as well, a bit of karting as well before I go, and just try and prepare myself mentally more so than anything else, that I'm ready for that kind of pressure. Because it's one thing I did find when I was doing the assessment, got into the car, I felt almost I was nervous, and I could feel the nerves, and I knew the nerves were getting to me, and I actually thought that was going to hinder me in the assessment. I thought that she would have noticed that and I would be struck off the list entirely. But it's just that mental pressure of, I have to perform right now, or I don't, you know, I'm not going to get this.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to focus, I'm trying to get my brain around that pressure and focus in it, especially now if I get into a car, I have to, you know, take a deep breath, like do something like my boss Niall would say, like, tap your helmet or do something to get yourself into that zone.
Distract yourself a bit, yeah.
Because that's where you are. You know how to do it. You know how to drive. You know how to race. You just need to focus your mind and shut everything else out. So that, I'm trying to do a lot of that. And, I'm trying to get sponsors as well, I guess. That's the part of it. And that's the bit that we need to do over the next couple of months. I'm very lucky that you're going to get an exclusive here, Kevin. Going to be an ambassador for Face the Fear at Activewear, which is amazing. They're
nice.
It's a great little company. Not a little company, but it's a great company. I met their founder, and he's amazing. Like, the whole point of the brand is that they give you the clothes to go and face your fears. And when I saw that, I was like, I need to be the brand ambassador for these guys, because that's exactly what I did. I changed my life and I went, right, I just need to face all my fears and go for it. And that's where why I went with them as this brand. And then I'm in talks with my own bosses about being an ambassador for digital motorsport as well for the competition. So
that's fantastic. Yeah, that's brilliant, Laura.
If anybody wants to sponsor me, my number is.
your number is at Laura Hannan Books on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. So
just don't forget that handle. Laura, the very best of luck to you on the 2nd and 3rd of March. I'll have my ear on the ground and clicking on stuff, looking up stuff. So hopefully we'll see your name up there. But above all, enjoy it, and yeah, the best of luck with it. And you never know, look, we'll be touching base again. And if you go off and become a big British GT racer, don't forget the old First Corner podcast. Stuff,
well, not,
you know, so,
absolutely,
you know.
Not. That's your luck. No, you'll get to see me on TV anyway. Maybe I'll become a meme or something. A TikTok sound. So,
I'll have the phone out recording the telly. Nice. Laura, thanks very much for joining us.
All right, thanks.